Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today on Fired Up with CJ, I have Dr. Joanne Deake, a speaker, educator, and psychologist who works with parents in their roles as guides or neurosculptors of their children's brains. Doesn't that sound exciting? So this segment starts a four-part series on brain research and parenting your teens. Welcome, Dr. Deake.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. I've been so excited because I'm just entering the teen set. I have a 10 and 12 year old boy, so I'm just entering this phase. So I'm very excited about getting a sense of what's happening for them. So tell me, how did you get started with your work? How did you get involved with the work that you do?
Well, the quick synopsis is I started as a teacher and there were so many brains that I just couldn't figure out how they worked. I thought if I went back and got a PhD in psychology, I would know everything well. And so postdoctoral work, and especially the last 10 years, all the brain research, because of brain imaging, we can look at live brains and see what works and what doesn't. And so it's been a never-ending quest to figure out how this incredible thing in our head works and how to understand all human beings.
Yeah. So when you said that you had so many brains in the classroom, what did you mean by that? What did it kind of feel like when you're in the classroom, or how did that manifest itself when you're in the class?
Well, sometimes I had up to 30 students in a class, and everybody's motivation and their learning style is somewhat different. And to try to have one size fit all when you're trying to teach something or explain something or get brains to accomplish something is almost impossible. And so you really, the best, you know, all the research says that the best teachers are the ones that have insight into each of their students. So understanding differences in how people learn and how they behave just seem to be a natural fit with figuring out how best to teach.
Yeah, and when you actually did take, because you said you started off with psychology, how did that inform your teaching and or process when you were afterwards? Or did you teach afterwards, or were you just learning psychology and then went back
teaching?
Well, I
went into private practice for a while, but I don't want to say anything negative for those people who are in private practice because it's an incredibly important task. But for me, it was less exciting than being in a place where I could help shape the healthy futures. And you know, my real specialty in my doctoral work was preventive psychology. How do you create the kind of environment at home, at school, in the world, so that growing human beings grow up to be healthy and resilient, and that we don't cause problems. So all of the research says that remediation or therapy or anything is far less effective than preventing the issue in the first place.
Wow, interesting. Okay, so when you and you said that at the last 10 years you sort of be looking into brain research, what led you to that? What led you to that path?
Most of psychology for the last 100 years has been all theory. Whether you're talking about Freud or Carl Rogers or B.F. Skinner, it was their opinion on what transpired in terms of understanding people. And opinion is very helpful when you have wise and experienced people, but there's nothing that can come close to watching a brain and seeing how things affect it, that some things work better than others, that some things are actually noxious to the brain and other things are quite helpful. So I try as much as I can in working with parents and teachers and other people to say, look, I'm not here to give you my opinion. Anybody can do that. I'm here to give you now what we have sturdy research to support. There are some things that we know work better than others. There are some things that we really shouldn't do for brains, and there are some that if I had my druthers and I were in charge of the world, I would want everybody to do with a brain. And so because it's not my opinion, and because it's based in research, we really can trust it, and we really have to pay attention to it.
Oh, yeah. So what I'm hearing is that you thought, you know what, it's one thing to hypothesize about and have theories, but it's another thing to have grounded research and know definitively this is going to help them. So that was your goal. And that's when, just out of curiosity, when you say people are examining the children's brains, how does it even work? Is there like something attached to their brain and you're feeding them information and looking how the information registers? How does one look at that brain and see what's happening?
Well, it's interesting you ask. Up until about 6 months to a year ago, the main way of doing this was with functional MRIs. And what happens is you go into a scanner, almost like an MRI that you would scan your body in. But it's much more detailed, and your head only goes in. And then we ask people to do things while they're in there.
Sounds really comfortable.
Yeah, to learn something, to hear something, to figure out something, to talk, anything that we want. And we watch and see what happens in the brain. And so we can tell where certain things are in the brain now. Before, when you just took x-rays and stuff, you just saw this lump. And now you can tell how many parts have to go together in the brain to help you to be able to write something you're thinking about, for instance. And then you can teach a person something and see which way works better, or you can scream at a person and tell them they're a terrible human being and see what happens in their brain with that. We can follow what prolonged stress does in the brain. We can see neurons actually dying. Then about 6 to 8 months ago, a brand new imaging has come on the market for babies. It's called MEG. It's a very long name, but for short we call them MEGs. In the last 6 months we've been able to watch babies from birth through the first couple of years of life, and this has given us stunning research in areas that we just didn't even know were happening. And I just came back from China because they're trying to teach English to their children, and they're finding real problems with this because they speak, get this, well, the Chinese accent. Oh, surprise. But part of what they want to do is to have their children speak English like a native English speaker.
Wow.
And you know, all the research before this that I had shared with them said you have to hear a foreign language with good enunciation before age 9. Now the research shows that between 8 months and 10 months of age.
Wow.
How do you like that? If you hear, if for instance, between 8 months and 10 months, you don't hear, for instance, L's and R sounds, you will never be able to repeat them or say them afterwards in the same way.
That is fascinating.
So I have the first brain book I wrote, Your Fantastic Elastic Brain. It looks at what we call the first magic decade from birth to 10. And are there things during that time period that if they don't happen, the brain can get better at it later in life, but never as good as if it had happened during that time? That's called windows of neurologic opportunity or sensitivity. Now the book I'm working on now is the second magic decade, age 10 to 20, also known as adolescence. And stunning research to show that some things need to happen during this decade. And if they happen during this decade, it lets us get to higher highs or be better in that as we go through life. if we don't do these things during this time period, it isn't that everything stops at 20, but you get less bang for the buck, so to speak. So I use rubber bands as metaphors, and I hold up a rubber band and say, and I give an example, you know, if you do this during adolescence, if you continue to learn and do this, then I stretch the rubber band to its max and say, look what you can do. But if you don't do it during this window, look what happens. And I keep slowly stretching the rubber band, but it can never get to that ultimate high that it could have gotten to. So these windows, especially in these 10-year chunks, are what I'm most interested in, because as a preventive psychologist, if parents know this, if teachers know this, then we will, over time, neurosculpt, if you will, that's why the word comes out, help these human beings neurosculpt themselves in the direction of being the best that they can be.
Interesting. Now, we're going to be talking about adolescence in the second decade in your second book. Can you tell us briefly what are some of the, like, you know, three key things have I had, 0 to 10, and especially given this new MEG research? So it sounds definitely, if you wanted to learn a language, teach them 8 to 10 months. What other kind of, or what would you say are the three things that you need to do for your parent?
I can't resist asking you, though, Melanie, why do you media people always ask for three things?
Oh, you know why? Because our brain is only limited to three.
No, it actually isn't, but that's a nice thought. But that's one reason I asked was I thought you were going to say that. And part of what I like to point out is these things that people say, like the brain, you only use 10% of your brain, or three things are what you remember best. None of that is based in research. That's all just opinion. So let me go back to research. Gotcha. From birth to 10, the first thing I would say is you learn your language through your ears first. Mm-hmm. From birth to 3 is one of the most profound windows we know. If there's interference in hearing during that time, your language learning and language expression will be affected somewhat or a lot, depending on how much interference that was for a lifetime. That's why doctors, even though they're loath to give antibiotics to babies, if there's an ear infection or liquid in the ear, they move right away to antibiotics, because interference with hearing affects the language part of the brain. If you could picture it, the baby brain is an incredible sponge in the language reception part. So, you know, it's okay to Google and goo to your baby periodically, but we also want really clear language.
And you know what? I just realized that I went over my time limit for the next segment. So we're going to move on to the next segment. My brain is limited to actually only 2. So based on actual empirical data. So many thanks to you, Dr. Deke. If you want to know more about Dr. Deke or hear more of our 4-part series on brain research in your teen, then continue listening live to Fired Up with CJ, playing every Thursday on the Transformation Talk Radio Network at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Part 2 of our 4-part series will be exactly what we talked about, what you need to know about your adolescent brain. We'll be right back.
TransformationTalkRadio.com, transforming the world one listener at a time.
Bambusa Bamboo Products saves trees and reduces waste by providing a new material for bathroom tissue and baby wipes. Bambusa Bamboo Products offers the only tree-free 100% bamboo bathroom tissue and award-winning baby wipes made from ultra-soft bamboo-derived fibers. Using material from renewable bamboo is the ideal alternative for toilet paper and wet wipes. Call 866-996-2867 or visit bambusa.com.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Lower back pain can be a real pain in the, well, you know. The newly patented VacuPractor relieves that pain simply, inexpensively, and from the privacy of your own home for just $59.95. Listen to what Brad and Dottie have to say about their VacuPractors.
The VacuPractor is amazing. I've had back pain for so long, it's taking time to adjust and not having the pain there.
Each time I've used my VacuPractor, I've gotten instant relief. I would recommend anyone with stiffness and lower back pain give the VacuPractor a try.
VacuPractor is just a one-time cost of $59.95. And you can use it whenever you need in your own home. How does it work? Simple. The VacuPractor uses vacuum pressure. It stretches muscles, restoring proper nerve function and reducing the possibility of disc failure. Finally, a simple, effective treatment for lower back pain that really works.
For more information about the VacuPractor or to order yours, call 800-676-9320 or visit VacuPractor.com.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today on Fired Up with CJ, I have Dr. Joanne Deek, a speaker, educator, and psychologist who works with parents in the roles as guides, as neurosculptors of their children's brains. The focus of part two of our four-part series on brain research and parenting your teen. The focus will be what you need to know about your brain development during the second decade, during the adolescent part of your children's lives. Thanks for coming again, Dr. Deek.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so tell us, so you in the first segment you said our child is like a rubber band, and you want to stretch
the brain.
I
refer to different parts of the brain as, you know, when I picture a head, I see it as being filled with a ball of rubber bands, and each section does something different. You know, the visual part of the brain doesn't hear, it only sees, and so that is a particular rubber band, and you're born with a certain size, and then the more you use it, literally, the brain's the muscle, and the bigger it gets. So it's a good visual cue for adults and for kids to understand the muscular nature of the brain and how, regardless of the size it comes in a particular area, it can be changed with work and time.
Okay, so let's buff up our brains. That's like exercising, right?
That's why the first book is called Your Fantastic Elastic Brain, and the one I'm working on now is Your Fantastic Elastic Adolescent Brain.
Ah, all right. What do we do to make our stretch our bands in our brains from 10 to 20? Is that even the age period, 10 to 20?
Yes. There's certain time periods that different parts of the brain are more sensitive to growth than others. The quick way I say it is, you don't want to teach algebra to a two-day-old. Even though the neurons that are going to do algebra are in there at birth, they're not ready. And so in the literature, when a part of the brain is ready for use, it's called robust. Okay, and so in the second decade, there are many areas that are more robust than they've ever been and are ready for use. And you get more bang out of the buck for using them during that period then. The one I think that is most important is what we call the PFC, the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is your executive part of your brain. It's your judgment, it's your organization, it's your morality, all of that. It's at peak stretchability in the second decade. And so we don't want adolescents to be in too controlled an environment where someone says to them, do this, do that, do it this minute, do it this way. this is the time for a lot of experimentation and judgment, so that if I don't set my alarm clock and don't get up in the morning, that what happens is part of what changes me. So making what we call missteps or mistakes is a very important component of this time period. And parents who are what we call helicopter parents, who try to control too much or try to guide too much, aren't understanding the incredible need for stretchability of decision making and judgment and those kinds of things. So that's the first thing that's coming out of the brain research.
Okay.
The second thing that's coming out of the brain research, the second part of the brain that's at peak stretchability is called the corpus callosum. That's a nice, neat name for the bridge between the two halves. It's at peak stretchability now. What does it do? It does complex problem solving and abstract thinking. So it's in the second decade that we want to move into more abstractions. Before that, things had to be concrete, related to everyday life. Now you can get into bigger ideas, and you want to push your kids to bigger ideas, to think about, for instance, what's going on in the world and how they can help with it, or, you know, that kind of thing. So that complex thinking part is critical. Then the third part that is brand new in the research, I just found out in the last year or so, there's a part an inch above and an inch behind the right ear. It's called the RTPJ, the right temporal parietal junction. That's a fancy name. But what it does, it's about the size of a dime or a nickel. And what it does is, if you use it a lot during the ages of 3 to 15, so it spans both magic decades, if you use it a lot during those ages, it actually becomes a specialist for the rest of your life. And all it does is help you figure out other people. We think it's a center of compassion, of understanding of others, of real social sophistication. And the problem is, this generation of adolescents, we're seeing less sympathy, empathy, and compassion of any generation that's been measured to date.
We think this part
isn't growing well in this generation. And then the question becomes, why not? And that's a whole long discussion about, because research doesn't answer why, it only answers what. That we see a dearth of growth here, not with everybody, but comparatively to other generations is pretty scary.
So when you have time,
sometime we should talk about that, because that's the part we really want kids and parents to stretch. And so volunteer programs, helping at the animal shelter, peer tutoring, those kinds of things. This is as stretchy as it can be. And even if you don't care about your child being compassionate, newer research is showing that if you develop compassion during these years, you also increase intelligence. So it's a kind of a double whammy that we're thinking about and concerned in that area.
Yeah, then so I'm hearing. Go ahead. The fourth thing.
I'm looking at the clock and knowing that you have limited time. Someday I'm going to be on a radio program where you let me, you know, talk longer than a few minutes. But anyhow, so the fourth area, and again, relatively new research. The part of the brain that deals with emotion, it's called the amygdala. It's a Greek word for almond because it looks like a little almond, and it's deep in the brain, and that's where you feel. You don't feel in your heart. You feel in your amygdala. So you feel love and fear and all the feelings that you can feel. Well, it's really stunning, but for 10 years only, during adolescence only, this part of the brain is swollen. It wasn't swollen before age 10. It isn't swollen after age 20-ish. And these are estimations based on hormonal things and things. We think it's due to raging hormones, but the end result is what bothered you a little bit before 10 or after 20 is going to bother you a lot now. Mm. What excited you a little bit is going to excite you a lot now. What angered you a little bit before is going to enrage you now. So a swollen amygdala during this time period is one of the reasons that we see kids having really what I would call kafui judgment. That's a clinical term, kafui. Mm-hmm. Kafui judgment, you see. Because if I go to sit down next to somebody and they don't want me to sit next to them and they give me a dirty look, if I was 8, it would hurt my feelings. If I'm a 14-year-old girl, I'm going to go, she hates me, everybody hates me, I'm just going to kill myself. And so this part of the brain is being studied a lot because it lends itself to adolescents acting in a way that doesn't make sense to those of us who are out of that magic decade period. Mm,
wonderful. So and you did it exactly on time.
See, that four of the highlights for adolescents. More to come in this next
okay.
book.
Oh, you're even doing the closing. You want to know more about hear more about our four-part series on brain research and your teen. Then can you continue listening live to Fired Up with CJ playing every Thursday on the Transformation Talk Radio Network at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Or you can listen later to the show on iTunes or www.firedupwithcj.com. Part three of our four-part series will be how girls' and boys' brains differ and what it means for parenting. We'll be right back.
Pretty little hair of yours. What goes on in that place in the dark? Well, I used to know a girl and I.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
We are living in a time of great challenges and greater opportunity for transformation. The good news is that public awareness of the need for change is also growing exponentially. More than ever, your transformative message is needed to empower millions across the globe.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of The Dr. Pat Show, and I'm excited about announcing an unprecedented opportunity for growth as we expand our broadcast by launching Transformation Talk Radio and the Transformation Network. Join me and a team of amazing people and host your own show on Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to expand your horizons, tap into the best listeners anywhere, and join one of the most positive and expansive networks today.
Historically, there came a time when the boundary of water was transcended as man developed the boat, and the barriers of water became freeways. Join Dr. Pat as she launches this exciting venture. To host a show, call 1-800-930-2819 or email host@transformationtalkradio.com.
Imagine you had a way to protect yourself from cancer, depression, and disease, and dispel the nastiest bugs that attempt to hide undetected. Take a moment to wonder, how good does that feel? How powerful. Did you know that enough golden sunlight produces vitamin D in your body to protect itself against disease? Producing enough vitamin D can kill cancer cells, reduce blood pressure and inflammation, and even help with weight loss. This amazing little vitamin is actually not a vitamin at all, but a powerhouse of protection that can activate your body's innate healing ability, but only if you have enough in your blood to shine the light. Tune in and listen to award-winning author Dr. Lucinda Messer share how you can harness the power of sunlight to create a healthy body and mind. Her book, Powerful Medicine Vitamin D, Shedding Light on a Worldwide Health Crisis, is like having a vitamin D expert on hand to answer all your health questions. For more information, visit PowerfulD.com. That's PowerfulD.com.
Blue jean, baby. Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today on Fired Up with CJ, I have Dr. Joanne Deeks, a speaker, educator, and psychologist who works with parents in their roles as guides or neurosculptors of their children's brains. The focus of our part three of our four-part series on brain search and parenting your teen is how girls and boys' brains differ and what it means for parenting. Okay, so in the previous segment, we were talking about what happens during the 10 to 20-year-old time period and kind of the environments that you should provide. How does that differ for if you have a girl or a boy that you're working with?
Well, had you asked me that even 5 years ago, I might have been hesitant to answer it. But one thing I recommend for teachers and parents, and even for adolescents, Scientific American Mind is a journal that comes out, I think, every 2 months. And the May-June 2010 edition was a special edition looking at the differences in male and female brains. And the entire special edition is devoted to what has been documented by brain imaging and research. So it's not opinion. And the fact that they had to put out a special edition that is quite thick says that in the last 5 years, we've learned more differences than we ever thought existed in the brain. Let me give you an example of one. If I showed you a functional MRI, which is a picture of a brain while it's working, of a male and a female who are listening to someone talk and getting ready to answer, you would see that language, what we call language processing or thinking about what somebody is saying to you, that there are two centers in a female brain, one on the left side and one on the right side. And in a male brain, there's only one on the left side. So
okay.
We've known this for a long time with things like cerebral accidents and things, that if a male has an accident and gets hit in that part of the head, he's not going to be talking again or understanding language. If a female does, she's got a backup system. And so that's just one of what we call many classic kinds of things that we see. Mm-hmm. Having said that, before we go any farther, let me just say that even though there are rather significant differences in male and female brains, not all male brains follow the same pattern and not all female brains. About 20% of females have a brain style more like a male, and about 20% of males have a female style more like a female. In the literature, these are called males with female differentiated brains or females with male differentiated brains. We're not talking homosexuality. It's just more of a continuum of how the brain develops. So you may be, you know, on the side that is very stereotypic of a female, or your brain may have in utero migrated over to collect some of the pieces, parts that are more stereotypic of a male. So when I am trying to figure out human beings, I certainly want to know your age, because that tells me something about your brain right away. I want to know your sex. That tells me another thing. And then I want to know whether you're a 20 percenter or an 80 percenter. Let me give another example. 80% females in general, if you say something to them like, that sweater makes you look fat, most of them will feel upset or hurt or anxious or something like that. If you say to a guy, that sweater makes you look like a sissy or whatever it is that is corollary that would upset him, about 80% of males will feel anger. And so you see the difference between the two sets of feelings. So we see, we observe this in people, but then the brain imaging shows there's actually two sides to the part of the brain that has feelings. The part of the brain that has feelings is called the amygdala, and that's the Greek word for almond, and it has a left side and a right side. Mm-hmm. And in females, the left side works more frequently, and in males, the right side works more frequently. Both have both, and they both work, but the left side feels fear, anxiety, and depression. The right side feels anger and what we call aggression, not in the negative sense necessarily, but going forward or aggressing.
Right.
Both have both, but one is, it's like handedness. the emotional brain is more left-handed. The male brain is more right-handed in all of what that means. So the exact same action is often felt. Different feelings are felt, and we wondered about that, and then we see a dramatic difference in the feeling centers of brains. You add that with adolescents who have what we call a swollen amygdala, a very sensitive amygdala during this 10-year period. And what happens?
I've connected all the dots. Things are clearer now.
Exactly. And so for girls, then, they have more problems with fear and anxiety and depression during adolescence than any other time. And for boys, they have more issues or more feeling of anger and aggression. Aggression can be the positive sense of competitiveness in sports and things like that. So during this 10-year period when you have a swollen amygdala, you also have it operating in very different ways often for boys and girls. So we see differences in the language centers. We see differences in the emotional centers. And then we see differences, you're probably not going to be surprised by this, but we see differences in the chemistry of adolescents. Now, we all know about estrogen and testosterone, but the real chemistry that affects the brain is somewhat related. For boys, it is testosterone, but for girls, it's oxytocin. So now we look at how do these chemicals, when they happen, affect the brain. And so researchers have done things like they actually put this up your nose. They put testosterone in females and oxytocin in males. And here's what they saw. With the males, when they gave them oxytocin, they tended to want to talk more, talk about their feelings more, cuddle, take less risks, and move around less. That's the effect on the brain and how it portrays in behavior. With females, when they put testosterone, when they gave them what we call a shot or a bolus of testosterone, which imitates what a boy would have produced, the females reported they wanted to move more, they wanted to talk less, they wanted to do more, and they felt less fear and less tentative. And so we see that during adolescence, now throughout life, those testosterone and oxytocin effects happen in human beings, but there's an extra surge of them during adolescence. So you combine the chemical differences with the amygdala differences, with the body differences, with the expectations of the world differences, and voila, you have incredible differences happening during adolescence that become less exaggerated the older you get.
Yes, and so I hear what I'm hearing as a parent from a parent's perspective is to have some compassion for your kids because they're going to be more volatile, way more volatile. Their brain's swollen.
And you can't possibly think and feel the way they do because you literally have a different brain. If I could show you your brain when you were 15 and your brain when you're 25 or 35, you would swear they were two different people looking at the brain.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have no idea what my brain would look like at my current age, perimenopausal. It's so cruel that everyone's going through these chemical changes at the same time. Nature is sometimes cruel that way. But what I'm definitely hearing is that, you know, so if you hear, you know, your kid is going to be, so if your kid is experiencing as a girl fear, anxiety, depression, this may not be a permanent thing. And it's going to be more accentuated because your brain is swollen.
It is. Right. Just the amygdala swollen, not the whole thing. But yeah, it is. And it is important for parents to understand that part of it is to live through and help help debrief and just be there for kids and know that it's not going to continue. And don't you know, blow it out of proportion and think, oh, my God, my child's going to have this problem forever. It's just a temporary thing.
But what you said earlier in the first segment that it's really important to provide a certain kind of environment. What does that mean about the environment and structure that you'd want to provide given that this is happening?
Well, it's a combination of things. We know that adolescents are designed to make a lot of mistakes because their judgment center is in full grown and they have a swollen amygdala. And you have to be forgiving. On the other hand, you also have to have a line in the sand. And it's all in how you do it. You know, instead of saying, what is wrong with you? You know better. You can say, you did it again. This is the 10th time. So now this is what's going to happen. But you don't put them down or believe that they should have known better. Take those words out of your vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I actually want to spend the whole next segment on the structure and environment because I think that's really important. So, the next segment of our four-part series will be about like what parents should do. Because I think now that we understand this, let's actually synthesize it together and figure out what us poor parents should do for our poor children who are going through all these chemical changes, brain changes. And, I definitely think that all parents want to stretch the rubber bands of, their kids, but the question is how we do so with compassion and grace. So many thanks to Dr. Joanne Deek. If you want to know more about Dr. Deek or hear more of our four-part series, why can't I say that today? On Brain Research and Your Teen, then continue listening to Live on Fired Up with CJ playing every Thursday on the Transformation Talk Radio Network at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Do you dream of being on The Amazing Race? Well, here's your chance. Grab a friend and prepare for an exhilarating race around the city when City Solve Urban Race comes to your city. Teams of two will solve clues and face fun challenges while racing around the city. The winning team gets $300 and a chance to be in the Las Vegas Championship race to compete for a grand prize of $5,000. Not only will you have a ton of fun, you'll also be helping a good cause. A portion of the proceeds will benefit a local charity. To start racing, go to CitySolveUrbanRace.com.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to AspireMag.net today. No purchase necessary. And live an inspired life.
Get ready to feel more alive. Alive with a Deal brings you the truth behind things you experience every day, ways you can heal yourself, and choices that make you feel truly alive. A Deal is a true Renaissance man, a world-renowned yoga master, naturopathic doctor for 10 years, an attorney, and has degrees in physics, math, hypnotherapy, massage, operatic singing, plus he's an expert in green home building. Alive with a Deal discusses health for your body, from heartache to heartburn, your mind, from judgment to joy, your home, from cooking to color, and your spirit, so you can bring forth your talents hidden deep within. A Deal bravely discusses things most people wouldn't touch, delivered with compassion, integrity, and wit. Alive with a Deal is about your own healing so that you feel more alive. Tune in each Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on Transformation Talk Radio and Alternative Talk. Feel more alive. Alive with a Deal.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today on Fired Up with CJ, I have Dr. Joanne Deek, a speaker, educator, and psychologist who works with parents in their roles as guides or neurosculptors for children. This is the final segment on our series on brain research and parenting your teen. And the focus of this part four is really strategies. What should we do as parents so that, and this is something that you mentioned earlier in the segment, about how we provide structure and an environment for our children. And you talked to us in segment two about all the different changes that are just happening in children's brains generally. And then segment three, we talked about the difference between boys and girls. Help us put it all together and come up with some strategies and what we should do.
Well, this is the part that is the hardest, isn't it? Because if there were blanket strategies, that book would have been written. It would have been a multi-billion-dollar sales book, and every parent would have purchased it. And you would have turned to page 12 when you had trouble with less and such and looked at what you should do, and you would have done it. And so the problem is that every brain is different enough that every strategy works somewhat differently. And so the way I like to approach it is, look, for most human beings who are adolescents, if you go through all the research and everything we know about how the brain works, how adolescents develop, if you could take a sieve and pull it through and pull out a few pearls, what would be the ones that would be helpful for most human beings that are adolescents? Always knowing that there will be exceptions, and yours may be an exception.
Right.
So I'm loath to give blanket statements. Having said that, I'm about to do it. yes. So one of the things is that by age 10, I call this the second magic decade, age 10 to 20. By age 10, you have enough cortical power, enough cognitive capacity, enough thinking and feeling and judging capability that part of what you want to do is to find something. What I say to parents is, as your child approaches 10 or is slightly over that, I hope your child has what Mary Pfeiffer called a North Star, or what I call a passion. That there's something other than friends that really gets to them, that lights up their life, that brings them joy, that brings sunshine into their life. Whether that's riding horses, or in my book, I had a story about somebody who was the best frog catcher in the fishing camp. Mm. Whatever it is, you don't have to necessarily be good at it, but, you know, you go to the barn and this horse puts its head on your shoulder and, you know, it just grabs your amygdala, you know, the feeling part of your brain. A child who in their early teens doesn't have a North Star or a passion is up for a lot of rocking of his or her boat. You know, okay. If somebody's mean to me at school and my passion is dog training, and I go home and I'm working with the dogs that I'm training, it diminishes the impact of that. So I say to all parents, it's the smorgasbord of what you've put in front of your children of experience and trying things out. Hasn't elicited some passion, something that so holds them that their boat can rock in other areas and it holds them steady. You know, it can be religion. It can be that, you know, I'm the guardian of a girl who's now out of her teens, but when she was in her teens, she was such an avid reader, and when she was in a book, the world would disappear, you know, and she could fail her chemistry test and come home and start reading and be okay. Mm-hmm. So that's critical. The next thing that I would say when we look at adolescents, what we want parents to be is, I'm going to now talk out of the other side of my mouth, as all good psychologists do. We all try to contradict what we just said just to keep people on their toes. We want parents to be somewhat of a teeter-totter or seesaw, whatever term you use, kind of, I call it teeter-totter parenting. What this means is, look, if my son wants to spend 10 hours or 5 hours a day with his Game Boy, I'm going to jump on the other side of the teeter-totter and say, oh, sweetie, you get it for an hour. Then after that, we're going to do weird things like talk and read and listen. because part of what we're seeing is the brain is very, very plastic during this time. And if you spend an inordinate amount of time doing something, it literally perpetuates a lopsided brain. And we need every piece's part. So we're seeing, for instance, that young children and adolescents are spending, get this, by age 5, our children are spending 50% of their waking hours with video, visual input. As a result, we're actually causing some auditory processing problems, auditory attention, motor development. We see kids with written expression problems because the palm and the wrist are needed, the muscles in the palm and the wrist are need for a lot of writing, and we don't see kids playing with three-dimensional things. And I'm sorry, your thumbs moving with a Game Boy doesn't do it. So part of what you have to look at the brain as being composed of all these pieces, parts. Each one does different things, and each one, each day, really needs to be exercised. Playing video games is like saying, okay, I'll only need to ever use my right arm, so I'll just do that all day, and I'll just let this left arm hang there. Well, I'm sorry, the left arm's going to be needed, too. And so even though you have a passion and you may be drawn to that and want to give it all of your time, it's very, very important during this time period for parents to be the teeter-totter influence to say, enough. You know, limits on TV, everything is showing that TV has hardly any positive effects on the growing brain and many negative. And so the latest research just came out yesterday. They had it on TV. It's coming from the American Pediatric Association and all kinds of brain people saying a limit of 2 hours a day for good programming because of the changes that we see in the brain that watches TV more than that. Same thing with Game Boys, same thing with computers. I can just go right down the list. So the major overriding concept, though, is the brain still needs to be in its smorgasbord phase of sampling and doing a variety of things. And if it specializes and only eats butter pecan ice cream, which would be my choice, it's going to have very negative effects for the rest of your life because this is a very plastic period. And the last thing I would quickly say, there's a part of the brain called the ACC, the anterior cingulate cortex. It only works when we make a mistake. It doesn't work when we do something correctly. And it's very important during this time period for kids to muck about and make mistakes because when you make a mistake, the ACC goes off and pretty much ensures learning. You don't forget what you made a misstep or mistake on. The example I like to use is Inuits or what we used to call Eskimos. When adolescents went out and stepped on the wrong color of white and their foot started to go under, if they didn't learn from that right away, they didn't join the gene pool, so to speak, if you get my drift.
Right, exactly. I get
and
it.
So we know that the ACC was there designed to increase learning exponentially. So, again, we don't want adolescents spoon-fed. Do this, do that, do it this way. We want a lot of experimentation, if you will, a lot of falling on their face, and that's what changes the brain and grows it the most.
Wonderful advice.
That's in a 10-minute segment.
I love it. All right. I dare not speak anything because I may miss something interesting. So, Dr. Trandy, thank you so much for coming today. If you want to know more about Dr. Deke or hear more of our four-part series on the brain research and your teen, then check it out other shows on www.firedupwithcj.com or iTunes, or join us live every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Thursday.
You've been listening to Fire It Up with CJ. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for more of Fire It Up with CJ. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.